This is For the Record program number 827, titled Update on the Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This is being recorded on December 19th of the year 2014. Hi there, boys and girls. It's time for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. Well, obviously, again, we are updating the long series of programs that I have been doing about Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, an individual I also call... Well, I call him a lot of things, not all of which I could repeat on the air. I also call him the Peach Fuzz Fascist, because he is exactly that. Perhaps the most descriptive term that I use to describe Edward Snowden is the obverse Oswald. Edward Snowden is a spy. He is an intelligence officer, and his supposed crusade to further the cause of human liberty and civil rights and freedom of expression and so forth is simply not to be taken at face value. When you pause and think and take a good look at Snowden, and again, Eddie the Friendly Spook is just that. He is a spy, and spy rhymes with lie, and you should never lose sight of that. We're going to be updating a number of considerations in this program, and I think in For the Record 828, or in another program that should be immediately in the wings, so to speak, I'm going to ruminate, give something of a fireside chat, reviewing aspects of the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, and we've done about 20 hours of programming just about that, and in particular, reviewing some of the overarching strategic considerations with regard to Eddie Snowden. In particular, the more time passes, the more convinced I am that the Ukrainian coup and the crisis in Ukraine and the Snowden op are inextricably linked. In particular, I think one of the goals of the Snowden op was to put the final nails in the coffin of Barack Obama's reboot with Russia. People may remember that once upon a time, this administration was working to improve relations with Russia. That is as dead as it could possibly be. And I think that Snowden's operation had a lot to do with that. And indeed, there are a number of areas of overlap between those who figure in the background, or really the foreground, of Eddie the Friendly Spook's operations, as well as some of the larger strategic elements, for example, the Austrian School of Economics, the Habsburg monarchical family, and other things that would initially appear to be an awfully long way away from home with regard to both Ukraine and Eddie the Friendly Spook, but in fact, they are not. The Western Ukraine and many of the other countries that were supportive of the Third Reich and are also very much hostile to Russia vis-a-vis Ukraine were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and its spring of nations, as we spoke about in For the Record 824. And indeed, when you begin examining Eddie the Friendly Spook and the what I call the Palestinian Libertarian Organization, you come to the Ludwig von Mises Institute and people who are explicitly opposed to democracy, explicitly in favor of slavery, and who had a very high regard indeed for absolute monarchy in general, and the House of Habsburg and the related House of Liechtenstein in particular. I would also note that the U.S. Agency for International Development has been the recipient of the largesse of Pierre Omidyar, as well as the not only has USAID been the recipient of the largesse of Pierre Omidyar with regard to its coup, so has Glenn Greenwald, who is Eddie the Friendly Spook's leaking journalist of choice. Very quickly, one of the things that we have seen in past programs is that the Snowden operation is an extension of the WikiLeaks operation as well. And as is the case with Snowden, although the so-called progressive sector has tripped all over itself in its hosannas and extravagant praise for Eddie the Friendly Spook, they did the same thing with WikiLeaks. Snowden appears to be an extension of the WikiLeaks op, and when you begin examining the forces that pay the bills and the people that are looming just off stage with regard to both Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, as well as Eddie the Friendly Spook, you find the far-right and explicitly fascist elements, individuals and institutions so far to the right that it would almost be flattering them to call them fascists. Again, you find people that you find the neo-Confederate movement, people who quite literally believe in slavery and who explicitly reject democracy. And these are the people who are behind the international travels of the peach fuzz fascist, the man I call the obverse Oswald. Lee Harvey Oswald was a U.S. intelligence officer. He was trafficked into the Soviet Union and then into various mostly left-wing groups in the U.S., given a left-wing slash communist cover. Then he was framed for the killing of Kennedy and murdered before he could adequately defend himself. Eddie the Friendly Spook is something very similar. He is a spook who also worked for U.S. intelligence and I believe also BND. He has been trafficked around the world, only instead of being framed as a villain, he is being portrayed as a hero and a crusader for human rights and civil liberties. Yet when you examine the people who underlie this creature, you find people who literally believe in slavery, not people who believe in freedom. And I may have puzzled as well as perhaps alienated some listeners when I mentioned that I am very supportive of the position of the NSA and the GCHQ vis-a-vis Snowden, warts and all, and I don't have any illusions about either NSA or GCHQ. I'm also very supportive of the Russian position vis-a-vis Ukraine, although, again, I don't have any illusions about Vladimir Putin, and I'm supportive, very supportive, of the Russian position vis-a-vis Ukraine, warts and all, and I believe that those two considerations are very much related. And I'm going to go into that in the fireside chat about Snowden and Ukraine and why I think the two are part of the same overall Earth Island operation, so to speak. Many of the things that I talk about in this program and in the next may will come as review for the veteran listener, and I want to apologize or at least give forewarning for that. There are also newer listeners, and because of the length and the complexity of the material that I've done on Snowden, I think there are a number of points worth repeating and belaboring up to a point. Also, do note, and we'll get into this later in this program, one of the things that I think figures very prominently into the misunderstanding of Eddie the Friendly Spook's operation and perhaps also a listener's misunderstanding of my support for NSA and GCHQ, and that concerns future shock. We are now in a fundamentally different phase of civilization, and it's one in which the concept of privacy really doesn't have a lot of meaning. Because of this technological revolution, which frankly has been embraced uncritically and wholeheartedly by the vast majority of humanity, who have plunged right in with their smartphones and all sorts of apps that are absolutely vaporizing any concept of individual privacy and security. Really, the Fourth Amendment doesn't have a whole lot of meaning at this point. Perhaps unreasonable seizure of assets by the government. But again, privacy is something that no longer exists, really. And people, I don't have a lot of pity for people that are weeping and moaning about the loss of privacy. The public has embraced this stuff, and they have embraced technology managed by corporations who are actively concerned with finding out every last detail of people's lives. And people are providing them with every last detail of their lives because they want to use that to make money one way or another. The NSA really does not give a flying you-know-what about the unremarkable circumstances of the vast majority of people's, frankly, turgid little lives. And that includes, frankly, most of you. Sorry if that gives offense. They don't care if you break wind in your cubicle at work. That's a military agency, and what they want to do is, many of them are sincerely patriotic. They all want to move up to the next pay grade, and they aren't going to find out. They aren't going to move up to the next pay grade by finding out whether Joe Doakes or Jane Doe breaks wind in their cubicle at work, or what kind of salted peanuts or whatever you like to eat when you go to the movies, okay, or what movies you like to watch at home or on your smartphone or what have you. They couldn't care less about that. But the corporations which people have enthusiastically and uncritically invited into the most intimate sanctums, intimate realms of their own behavior, they are very much interested in every last detail of your lives, and you are giving it to them, and believe me, you're going to find out the meaning of Emory's ninth principle, which is, if you don't take care of business, business is damn well going to take care of you. You don't think so? Stick around. And again, we'll go into this more later. One of the aspects of this operation that I have pointed out is that it makes no sense from on its surface. Supposedly Snowden is a crusader for human rights and civil liberties, etc., and yet he is an ultra-right-winger who is opposed to Social Security and who thinks we should go back to the gold standard. He is a political disciple of Ron Paul, who has joined at the hip with people like David Duke, the neo-Confederate movement, people who believe in slavery, the aforementioned Ludwig von Mises Institute, and when he was in Geneva, posted there, by the way, by his employer at the time, the CIA, Snowden wrote on an internet chat board, quote, and I'm going to have to attenuate this slightly because it's not fit for airplay, but Snowden wrote, the elderly wouldn't be so effing helpless if the government would stop sending them those effing checks so they could sit around on their A-blank-blanks in hospital beds all day. And I'm paraphrasing ever so slightly. If you would like to read that statement in all of its unvarnished glory, check out For the Record 771. That is not somebody who is interested in human welfare. The very first thing he does after he gets all of his information, some 2.7 million documents, which he could not possibly have reviewed on his own, he then travels from Hawaii, where he was working as a contractor for NSA. Then he goes to Hong Kong, courtesy of Jacob Applebaum of WikiLeaks. Jacob Applebaum then goes to Germany, and he goes to Hong Kong, again, part of China, not exactly a bastion of internet freedom and freedom of political expression, just as Obama is meeting with President Xi of China, thereby complicating Obama's foreign diplomacy. Then just as Obama is going to Germany to meet with Angela Merkel and other EU members, Glenn Greenwald, a Nazi fellow traveler in a previous professional incarnation as an attorney, leaks information about NSA spying on Germany, thereby complicating Obama's relations with Germany. Then, courtesy of Sarah Harrison, also of WikiLeaks, he travels from one bastion of internet freedom and bastion of political, free political expression, China, to another world-renowned bastion of internet freedom, namely Russia. Russia, just as Obama was preparing to meet with Vladimir Putin at the summit conference, which was canceled, much as the deliberate sabotage of the 1959 U-2 flight of Gary Powers, blamed, by the way, on Lee Harvey Oswald, led to the cancellation of a summit conference between then-Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev and then-U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower. And all these people, the aforementioned Jacob Applebaum, the aforementioned Sarah Harrison of WikiLeaks, Peter Sundy, the founder of Pirate Bay when he was working for Siemens, which has very close links to German intel, they are in Germany. Laura Poitras, who is working very closely with Snowden and with Glenn Greenwald, is in Germany as well. And as we are going to see, Germany not only does the same thing as the NSA, of course, they were partnered with NSA. So why are they in Germany? It makes no sense for them to go to Germany, since Germany does exactly the same thing. And all of them are talking about what a bastion of freedom and civil liberties Germany is. That is nonsense, because they do the same thing with fewer constitutional provisions than, at least superficially or officially, exist for NSA. One of the aspects of the Eddie the Friendly Spook travels was, of course, the huge, dominant international brouhaha about the NSA hacking and monitoring Angela Merkel, German Chancellor Angela Merkel's cell phone, her mobile phone. Well, guess what? Courtesy of the local blog from Germany of November 23rd of 2014, a Focus magazine article titled, "Germany to drop probe into U.S. spying on Merkel." And this reads in part, "Germany is dropping a probe into the alleged tapping of Chancellor Angela Merkel's mobile phone by U.S. spies due to a lack of evidence," magazine Focus said on Saturday. And still more about this story. 6 months after the investigation, let me reread the whole story here. I got my paperwork a little messed up. From the local of November 23rd of 2014, a Focus magazine article, Germany to drop probe into U.S. spying on Merkel. Germany is dropping a probe into the alleged tapping of Chancellor Angela Merkel's mobile phone by U.S. spies due to a lack of evidence, magazine Focus said yesterday. 6 months after the investigation began, experts have failed to find any solid proof to back the case and have therefore recommended that it be dropped, the magazine reported, quoting sources close to the German Justice Ministry. The result of the probe is almost zilch. A lot of hot air, but nothing done, one source was quoted as saying. Well, that is quite remarkable after that huge international brouhaha. Again, it is unremarkable that the NSA would be tapping Angela Merkel's phone. That is standard operating procedure for all major intelligence services. It is a standard part of spycraft and a standard part of statecraft. Germany does exactly the same thing. But what is so interesting is that after this huge international firestorm, and after we hear over and over and over about this horrible thing, turns out that Germany is dropping the investigation for a lack of solid evidence. And indeed, one source was quoted as saying, the result of the probe is almost zilch. A lot of hot air, but nothing done, unquote. And that really is altogether remarkable. We wonder what perhaps may have taken place, because in the meantime, not only has it been revealed that, again, Germany does exactly the same thing. They were monitoring phone calls that were made by two U.S. Secretaries of State, John Kerry and Hillary Clinton, both, by the way, with regard to the alleged use of chemical weapons by Hafez Assad, or by the Assad regime in Bashar Assad's regime in Syria. another thing that is so interesting about that is that the tapping of Kerry's phone and the alleged tapping and the tapping of Hillary Clinton's phone and the alleged monitoring of Angela Merkel's phone figured prominently in an attempt by Germany to get included into the very Five Eyes electronic spying program they so vigorously condemned officially. In fact, they wanted in on that. We've covered that before. And for the record, 807 and other programs as well. Reviewing that very quickly, an article from Bloomberg News of July 12th of 2014. U.S. offered Berlin Five Eyes Pact. Merkel was done with it by Patrick Donahue and John Walcott, W-A-L-C-O-T-T. By the way, all of these articles are included in their entirety. There are long excerpts and often the entire article in the description for the record 827. And again, I turn every program into a long article length description, which is on the SpitfireList.com website. This article about the U.S. offering Berlin the Five Eyes inclusion in order to prevent Germany expelling the CIA station chief from Berlin. U.S. Ambassador John Emerson made his way to the foreign ministry in Berlin armed with a plan to head off the worst diplomatic clash of Angela Merkel's chancellorship. Emerson came to the July 9th meeting with an offer authorized in Washington. Provide Germany a U.S. intelligence-sharing agreement resembling one available to only four other nations. The goal was to assuage Merkel and prevent the expulsion of the Central Intelligence Agency's chief of station in Berlin. It wasn't enough. And again, we've talked about that before. The point being here that Germany wanted in, as we've seen on the Five Eyes spying program. That is basically the echelon network. The Five Eyes are the U.S., Great Britain, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. And Germany wanted in on that. The Five Eyes date back to World War II. And so not only were they not shocked that there was gambling going on in this establishment. They wanted to play, and we were apparently willing to provide them with a very large bankroll with which to begin their gaming. I wonder if the dropping of the Merkel probe may have had something to do with a clandestine inclusion in the Five Eyes program. I don't know. Note again that the brouhaha over the alleged probe, the probe into the alleged hacking of Angela Merkel's mobile phone is more than a little hypocritical. AP story, August 16th, 2014, by Frank Jordans, J-O-R-D-A-N-S, report, German intel spied on Kerry and Clinton. Germany's Foreign Intelligence Agency eavesdropped on calls made by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and his predecessor Hillary Clinton, the German magazine Der Spiegel reported on Saturday. The respected news weekly reported that the agency, known by its German acronym BND, tapped a satellite phone conversation Kerry made in 2013 as part of its surveillance of telecommunications in the Middle East. The agency also recorded a conversation between Clinton and former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan a year earlier, Der Spiegel claimed. The Germans, and again, this is in For the Record 807, the description is included in, the vast bulk of the article is included in the description for the Record 827 as well. Skipping down, if true, the revelations would be embarrassing for the German government, which has spent months complaining to Washington about alleged American spy activity in Germany. Again, they're shocked. One of the sidelights to this is that the CIA station chief in Berlin was expelled from Germany for receiving clandestine BND documents from a BND agent identified only as Marcus, M-A-R-K-U-S-R, R period. And the documents were BND transcripts of the monitoring of Kerry's and Clinton's phones. The point being that BND was intercepting phone calls from Kerry and Clinton. They were transcribing them, and a BND agent was taking those transcripts and selling them to the CIA. And because of that, the Germans expelled the CIA station chief from Berlin. I wonder if NSA and CIA have figured out yet that the Germans are doubling on them and that they're not really their friends. Who knows? It is impossible past the point for a layperson to tell just exactly what is going on behind the locked steel gates of Spy City. But certainly if either NSA and or CIA have figured out that the Germans are doubling on them, that BND is doubling on them, certainly doesn't show on the surface. Although the fact that Germany was the number one electronic intelligence target of NSA actually gives me a lot more confidence in NSA than I had before. It tells me that at least some people in NSA are aware of what is really going on in the world, though perhaps not enough. The Star.com blog of August 16th of 2014 has a McClatchy News Service story by Matthew Schofield. This again was discussed in For the Record 807. Germany accidentally spied on Hillary Clinton and John Kerry. Reads in part, the German Foreign Intelligence Agency has admitted tapping at least one phone call each by current U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton while they were aboard U.S. government jets, according to German media reports. The reports claim Kerry's intercepted communication was a satellite phone call from the Middle East in 2013. Clinton's communication was also a satellite call in 2012 and was reportedly to then United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan. And again, the hypocrisy of everybody complaining, oh, the NSA monitored the UN. Well, of course they did, along with every other major intelligence agency on Earth. Here's BND tapping a call between Hillary Clinton and Kofi Annan, which should come as no surprise. But again, the hypocrisy here, saying they're shocked to learn that there's gambling going on in this establishment, is one of the things that I'm scoring here. As well as asking the question why so many of the particulars from Peter Sunday, who founded the Pirate Bay, basically the Pirate Bay site, funded, by the way, by Carl Lundstrom, the main financier of the Sweden Democrats, arguably Sweden's most prominent fascist party. Peter Sunday was the founder of Pirate Bay, was working for Siemens at that point in time. Siemens with very close links to German intel. And Peter Sunday now resides in Germany, as does Laura Poitras, the close associate of both Snowden and Glenn Greenwald, as does Sarah Harrison, the WikiLeaks, who got Snowden from Hong Kong to Moscow, as does Jacob Applebaum, who appears to have gotten Snowden from Hawaii to Hong Kong, although he's been somewhat equivocal about that. The indications are quite strong. Why are they in Germany when Germany not only does the same thing, but they were partnered with NSA? That's one of the many things here that does not compute. Continuing with this McClatchy News Service story from thestar.com. In the twist that connects this tale to the broader spying scandal, the news reports note that after Clinton's phone call was picked up, an order from the BND leadership was sent out to delete the communication. But the German charged with deleting the conversation was Marcus R., who has been charged with selling 218 official documents to U.S. intelligence and, rather than deleting the conversation, sold the transcript to his American contacts. Marcus R., who under German law cannot be fully identified unless he is convicted, allegedly made a total of 25,000 euros or $32,500 by selling documents to the CIA. Skipping down again. During the Syrian conflict, and particularly after the chemical weapons attacks of August in 2013, there was quite a bit of discussion of Syrian official conversations picked up by German intelligence. Both Kerry's and Clinton's phone calls were picked up while they were flying over conflict areas. Again, CIA station chief expelled from Germany for securing transcripts of the BND pats on Kerry's and Clinton's phones. Another interesting story, the German government has okayed the purchase of a company called Secusmart, S-E-U-S-M-A-R-T. They handle the technical security for mobile phones. It has been purchased by BlackBerry, and the German government said okay, provided that there is a no-spying agreement, and providing that BlackBerry provides BND, or the German Intelligence Service, BSI, that's a German security, information security agency, with the source codes for the BlackBerry technology. That would have tremendous applicability toward German spying on mobile phones as well. The following is from the Ars Technica blogspot of November 28th of 2014, an article by Cyrus Farivar, F-A-R-I-V-A-R. German government says ya to BlackBerry's acquisition of Secusmart. Again, that title, and I may be mispronouncing it with that name, S-E-C-U-S-M-A-R-T. The article reads in part, the German government has signed off BlackBerry's acquisition of the German company Secusmart, according to local media. Secusmart is the company that develops software and hardware to protect government phones, including the Merkel phone used by Chancellor Angela Merkel. She moved to a more secure device after it came out that the National Security Agency had been allegedly monitoring her communications. Back in July of 2014, the Canadian handset maker announced that it would acquire the Dusseldorf-based company. In order to get Berlin's approval, BlackBerry apparently had to agree to a number of government demands. First, it was required to give full access of its source code to the German Information Security Agency, known by its German acronym, BSI. Further, Berlin stipulated that Secusmart's development would continue to take place in Germany, and a, quote, binding, unquote, agreement dictates that BlackBerry would not share private information with foreign governments or intelligence agencies, considering that they're giving full access of its source code to the German Information Security Agency. That would strongly suggest that this is going to give Germany a leg up on electronic intelligence vis-a-vis the monitoring of cell phones. Another, some more stories about German electronic espionage and their hypocrisy. And again, with most of the principals in this story, Applebaum, Laura Poitras, Sarah Harrison, Peter Sunday, living in Germany, Nazi fellow traveler Glenn Greenwald is down in Brazil, which is prime Bormann country. Of course, Julian Assange is holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And Eddie Snowden is in Moscow, or at least in Russia, having helped to deep six Barack Obama's reboot with Russia. The, again, one of the things that is so well, the profound discontinuity of them being in Germany, and then Jacob Applebaum has been very out front about saying that Germany is just much more protective of the civil liberties of individuals. Nothing could be further from the truth. Not only does Germany spy on its own citizens in contravention of German law, there are no German laws preventing the spying on foreign citizens at all. Another article from the local, from Germany of November 28th of 2014, BND spied on Germans living abroad. Reads in part, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, or BND, parenthetically evolved from the Galen spy outfit from World War II, Germany's Foreign Intelligence Service spied on some citizens living abroad, a former lawyer for the spies told members of parliament on Thursday. Dr. Stefan Burbaum, B-U-R-B-A-U-M, who worked at BND from 2000 to 2005, said that some Germans were targeted as, quote, office holders, unquote, a legal loophole the spies used to circumvent the law that protects German citizens from being spied on by its own intelligence agency. Normally, the intelligence agencies must overcome high legal hurdles laid out in the so-called G10 law to spy on German citizens, including when they live abroad. Otherwise, information regarding German citizens has to be filtered out from any foreign communications intercepted by the BND. But the German spies argue that a citizen working for a foreign company abroad is only protected in his private life, not in his professional communications, Birbaum told the Bundestag Inquiry Committee into the National Security Agency mass spying. The office holder is the legal person, unquote, Birnbaum said, again quoting, it's a small exception, but a German citizen can function as an office holder in a foreign organization. So this, again quoting, the decisive thing is whether he's communicating as a citizen or as an office holder, unquote. This construct of an office holder is just as absurd as it appears in the law, unquote, Konstantin von Notz, N-O-T-Z, of the Green Party said. Further, foreigners' communications conducted abroad are not protected even if they are in contact with German people or work for a German company. Skipping down, under the G10 law, the BND is also allowed access to data from German telecommunications firms to search for specifically identified suspicious traffic. But Birnbaum told the MPs that the BND regularly retains traffic which it had not received specific permission to investigate, which it collects during such trawls. And again, why are Harrison, Applebaum, Laura Poitras, and Peter Sunde in Germany? That makes no sense at all, given this. By the way, too, I would note, for the purposes of American citizens, there is no German law about spying on American citizens, and note that the BND is allowed access to data from German telecommunications firms. If you use T-Mobile or MetroPCS, those are both controlled by Deutsche Telekom, which in turn is controlled by the German government. I will guarantee you that the BND is spying on your calls here or your emails and or your emails here in the U.S. So don't lose sight of that. Yet another story about how the Germans circumvent the law with regard to electronic intelligence. And again, with most of Team Snowden, so to speak, residing in Germany. Why are they there when not only has the BND partnered with NSA, including using their X-Keyscore program, but they do the same bloody thing. They're not protective of civil rights. One of the things that they do is to argue that, well, German law does not apply to the interception of satellite communications because of the fact that the satellite communications come from outer space, and therefore German law doesn't apply. Well, that is a loophole that would apply pretty much around the world and pretty much across the board as well. They could argue the same thing, for example, about tapping into fiber optics cables undersea. That doesn't take place on German turf at all. But again, by way of noting the consummate hypocrisy and why I use the famous line from Casablanca, they're shocked to learn that there's gambling going on in this establishment. The following is from the World Meets Us blog run by the German publication Die Zeit, capital D-I-E, capital Z-E-I-T, of October 13th of 2014. This article is by Lisa Caspari, C-A-S-P-A-R-I. BND data protection officer tells how work with NSA trumps German law, unquote, skipping down. The dispute centered on Bad Aibling Station, where German intelligence officers capture and analyze satellite data from abroad, telephone calls in Afghanistan and Pakistan, for example. Members of American intelligence attached to the NSA are also stationed on the grounds. According to the testimony of Dr. F., BND President Schindler considers the satellite data as existing largely in a legal vacuum, as it is gathered from space where German law does not apply. And again, so any communication that is taken from outer space, and communications satellites are at the epicenter of this type of communication, is not considered covered by German law because it comes from outer space. So again, why are Peter Sunday, Laura Poitras, Sarah Harrison, and Jacob Applebaum hanging out in Germany? And also note again that Angela Merkel, who has been very successful, by the way, in presenting herself as a wounded martyr for the freedom of expression, etc., Angela Merkel, unlike Barack Obama, Angela Merkel has come out against net neutrality. Obama, although he made a very questionable appointment to head the FCC, has explicitly encouraged the FCC to maintain net neutrality, and Obama is on the record in favor of it. Angela Merkel is on the record as being against net neutrality. The following is from the Verge blog of December 6th of 2014, an article by Dante D'Orazio, capital D, apostrophe, capital O-R-A-Z-I-O. Angela Merkel argues against net neutrality, calls for special access fast lane, it reads in part. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has laid out her vision for the future of the Internet, and net neutrality proponents won't be pleased. In comments on Thursday in Berlin, Merkel argued for a two-lane Internet. One lane for special, unquote, high-priority service, and another that's meant to resemble the Internet as it exists today. While supporters of net neutrality argue that it is key to the continued growth of the Internet, Merkel believes just the opposite. She argues that fast lanes are necessary for the development of new, advanced uses of the Internet, like telemedicine or driverless cars. According to Merkel, without guaranteed fast access Internet connections, such innovations won't come to market. It's not clear how such a two-lane system would be implemented or regulated. For instance, it's unknown if there would be limits on what sort of companies could pay for access to a fast-lane Internet. A report from Frankfurter Allgemeine cites sources inside the German government who say that on-demand Internet video streaming services would be among the companies that would be able to pay access for high-speed service. The European Union currently mandates true net neutrality, though discussions have been underway for the future of Internet regulation. Merkel believes that her position is a middle ground, but the idea that the general traffic lane will operate under net neutrality depends entirely on how much bandwidth it receives from Internet providers. If the main traffic lane isn't fast, and any company can opt for fast lane access, companies will likely find it necessary to pay up for direct access just to compete. The exact opposite of net neutrality. I would note parenthetically, Angela Merkel is also pressing for a consolidation of German European telecommunications firms that would, under Merkel's ground rules, that would further accelerate the drift toward against net neutrality. Another interesting thing that would have profound implications for German electronic counterintelligence, and also looms in the background of one of the goals of the Snowden operation, in my opinion, which is an underground Reich/German/Bormann capital network attack on U.S. high-tech industry. Google certainly is something of a Goliath in the high-tech industry and is not at all a benevolent company. It is now under fire in Europe, and I would note that one of the things that the Germans are pressing for is for Google to reveal the algorithm that is at the core of its search engine. The following is from the Business Insider of September 16th of 2014, an article by James Cook. Germany just asked Google to do the impossible, reveal its secret search algorithm. And this reads in part, German Justice Minister Heiko Maas, it's H-E-I-K-O, last name capital M-A-A-S, is calling on Google to become more transparent by disclosing exactly how it ranks search results. This, of course, will simply never happen. The algorithm is the heart of Google, the source of all its wealth and power as the planet's best index of knowledge. Google is just never going to give that up. CEO Larry Page will fight to the death. Nonetheless, in an interview with the Financial Times, Moss explains that Germany is unhappy with the search giant's actions in Europe and wants it to reveal the details of its search algorithm in the interests of consumer protection. Google search remains the most important part of Google's business, with advertising on the platform forming the majority of its $60 billion in annual revenue. But now, Germany's government has escalated its antitrust case against the company by requesting that Google publishes how websites are ranked on Google search. Google has apparently pushed back against the request, claiming that publishing the search engine algorithm would mean revealing its business secrets and opening up the service to exploitation by spammers. I would argue it would also be a tremendous use to intelligence services, in this case, BND and the German Electronic Communications Security Agency, the BSI. And the next story also concerns Google's search engine and serves as something of a pivot point. Again, there may be listeners who are, you know, shocked that I'm supportive of NSA and GCHQ in the Snowdenista affair. Well, a major part of the reason is that we are now in a different age of civilization. We have plunged with regard to computers and the internet and mobile technology into a whole new universe. Google, for example, we're talking about Google, they are now working on apps which would use nanotechnology to permit people's cell phones to monitor the most intimate aspects of their physiological health, you know, blood pressure, blood sugar levels or insulin levels for diabetics, heartbeat, etc., and this for people's mobile phones. And people are using mobile phone apps to monitor their homes, where their kids are. These things are, well, it's a whole new ball game. These technologies are not private. They certainly can be hacked. And the tech companies themselves can use these various apps to gather whatever information they so desire. I would also note that companies like Facebook, Amazon in particular, are using drone technology. Google is also using balloons to help distribute their wireless networks, and those balloons have military applications, and there are military intelligence veterans operating them. The various robots being developed by Google also have military applications, things like driverless automobiles. I mean, that is a stunning thing. All of these technologies will ultimately be hacked, and basically the human race is something like the sorcerer's apprentice at this point in time. People have begun routinely playing with technologies, the full implications of which they clearly don't understand. For people to be complaining about privacy, there is no privacy anymore. The Fourth Amendment has been rendered obsolete by some tremendous developments in technological civilization. And yet, as Albert Einstein observed with regard to the development of nuclear weapons, everything has changed but our way of thinking. And the technologies are becoming not only so intricate, but with things like nuclear power plants and other critical infrastructure facilities vulnerable to hackers, and with the possibility of cyber terrorism a growing threat, there has to be some major federal agency with its fingers on the pulse. And I'm not at all sure that NSA is up to the task at hand. Maybe it is. Again, it's impossible past the point for a layperson to tell exactly what's going on behind the locked steel doors of Spy City. I'm not sure NSA is up to the task at hand, but it is to be hoped that they can, because working with other federal agencies, I think that's really all of our best hope to avoid some sort of enormous catastrophe. A hacker or a group of hackers, wouldn't even need to be a state actor, taking down one or more nuclear power plants. French intelligence, for example, has developed a very good network for messing with other countries' nuclear power plants. And that's the kind of capability that now exists. And in this brave new world, or maybe a chicken squat new world, I'm certainly hoping that NSA is capable of at least up to a point keeping its finger on the pulse and keeping that pulse going. Again, they may not be up to the task, but I'll tell you who sure as hell isn't up to the task, and that is Rand Paul, the ACLU, Julian Assange, Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, Mr. Let's Get Rid of Social Security and Bring Back the Gold Standard, Mr. The elderly wouldn't be so effing helpless if the government would stop sending them their effing, those effing checks so they could lie around on their A-blank blanks in hospital beds all day. They're not going to be the ones who are up to the task. I'm certainly hoping that NSA and others will be. But again, part of the problem here is future shock, a point I will make at greater length in future programs. Jumping back to Google's search engine, one of the things that is looming on the horizon is the development of artificial intelligence in part to help Google's search engines refine themselves. From the Beta Beat blog of December 3rd of 2014, an article by Sage, S-A-G-E, Lazaro, L-A-Z-Z-A-R-O, artificial intelligent robot scientists could be the next project for Google's artificial intelligence firm. And this reads in part, in the future, humans may not be the only ones conducting lab experiments. In late October, we wrote about the Neural Turing Machine, that's T-U-R-I-N-G after Alan Turing, a Google computer so smart it can program itself. In the time since, it's become clear that this is only the beginning and we should expect a lot more from DeepMind Technologies, the little-known startup acquired by Google, who developed a human-like computer and sports the mission, solve intelligence, unquote. In discussing DeepMind Technologies' delve into the future of computers with MIT, founder Dennis Hassabis, or Hassabis, H-A-S-S-A-B-I-S, detailed the company's research and mentioned that he wants to create artificial intelligence scientists. He explained that although they're currently working on some smaller AI activities, like searching for ways to apply DeepMind techniques to existing Google products, such as search and YouTube recommendations, his plans for the future are bigger than a better search engine. He dreams of creating artificially intelligent, quote, scientists, unquote, that could develop and test their own hypotheses in the lab. He mentioned that there's also a future for DeepMind's software in robotics. So they're going to be combining artificial intelligence and robotics. Again, it's a brave new world. It is a whole new landscape of civilization, and that's one of the reasons why I'm generally supportive of NSA and GCHQ, warts and all, and I have no illusions about them. There's going to have to be some sort of significant, effective government body monitoring these new developments. Otherwise, if we don't go completely to hell on our own, and I'm afraid that we will, without adequate monitoring and regulation of these new technologies, we are going to go straight to hell, all of us. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. An example of the type of thing that can now be done. And yet another reason why I'm supportive of NSA and GCHQ, warts and all, and in our next talk, I'm going to relate that with the reason why I am supportive of Russia vis-a-vis the Ukrainian situation. The following is from Bloomberg News of December 10th of 2014. It's an article by Jordan Robertson and Michael Riley. Mysterious 08 Turkey pipeline blast opened new cyber war era, it reads in part. The pipeline, this is a Turkish pipeline, was outfitted with sensors and cameras to monitor every step of its 1,099 miles from the Caspian Sea to the Mediterranean. The blast that blew it out of commission didn't trigger a single distress signal. That was bewildering, as was the camera's failure to capture the combustion in eastern Turkey. but investigators shared their findings within a tight circle. The Turkish government publicly blamed the malfunction on Kurdish separatists. The Turkish government publicly blamed a technical malfunction. Kurdish separatists claimed credit, and BP had the line running again in 3 weeks. The explosion that lit up the sky over Rafhaya, that's R-E-F-A-H-I-Y-E, a town known for its honey farms, seems to be forgotten. But it wasn't. For intelligence agencies, the blowout was a watershed event. Hackers had shut down alarms, cut off communications, and super pressurized the crude oil in the line, according to four people familiar with the incident who asked not to be identified because details of the investigation are confidential. The main weapon at Valve Station 30 on August 5, 2008, was a keyboard. The revelation, quote, rewrites the history of cyber war, unquote, said Derek Revron, R-A-V-E-R-O-N, a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island. And again, the entire article is present in the description for the record, 827. And it is quite frightening indeed to contemplate what can be done with hacking. And again, with nuclear power plants online, nuclear power plants are a bad idea in and of themselves. And when you couple that with weakification, enabling hackers to get in and mess with them, you're talking about some serious trouble indeed. And it's not just governments that could do something like that. Consider the following from the WUSA online blog on December 12th of 2014, an article by Aaron Erian von der Bellen, B-E-L-L-E-N, spy drone hacks Wi-Fi networks and listens to calls. It's small, it's bright, reading in part, it's small, it's bright yellow, and it's capable of cracking Wi-Fi passwords, eavesdropping on your cell phone calls, and reading your text messages. It's an unmanned spy drone, and it just landed in Washington, D.C. Longtime friends and former Air Force buddies Mike Tassey, T-A-S-S-E-Y, and Rich Perkins described their state-of-the-art cyber drone as hard to take down, hard to see, and virtually hard to detect. They built it in a garage using off-the-shelf electronics to prove that a drone can be used to launch cyber attacks. It needs a human for takeoff and landing, but once airborne, it can fly any pre-programmed route posing as a cell phone tower and tricking wireless cell phones. Again, this was built in a garage for $6,000 by two private citizens. It's a tiny drone that can mimic a cell phone tower. Again, we are in an entirely different technological landscape, a brave new world. And I don't know who's going to properly monitor this. Again, I sure hope that the folks at NSA and GCHQ are up to the task. I don't know that they are. I don't know that they aren't. But I'll tell you, the ACLU sure as bloody hell isn't. And the other people who are wringing their hands and screeching and yelling, including, by the way, Angela Merkel, aren't up to the task. So let's hope, and I hope NSA and GCHQ, warts and all, are up to the task. More about this in a fireside chat relating the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook or the Obverse Oswald to the Ukrainian crisis. Well, that's all we have time for today, boys and girls. Be sure to tune in for the next exciting episode of the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes For the Record, program number 827, update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, being recorded on December 19th of 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.